World Ain't Ready, Ilima's fanfic written by Idiopathic Smile, and read by Full Day's Drive. Chapter 2. Grantaire doesn't realize he's been avoiding Combeferre until he's faced with it, until there's no escape. It's about 10 minutes after one of the APC meetings has broken up, and Grantaire is loitering by the south exit when he approaches. There's a brief, uncomfortable moment where they have to decide how much to acknowledge each other, and Grantaire opts for a silent nod. But Combeferre must feel differently, because he says, "Hey, Grantaire," and now they have to exchange words. Grantaire pulls his earbuds off, pauses his MP3 player. "Hey, are you waiting for a ride?" Combeferre asks politely, the keys to his sensible used Volvo dangling from one hand. Sometimes talking to Combeferre feels like talking to a teacher. He's so mature, it's hard to trust him. "I am the ride," Grantaire says, shaking his head. "I'm waiting for Eponine." Combeferre seems to consider this. He slips his keys back into his coat pocket. "I'll wait with you," he says. This probably merits a response, but Grantaire can't think of one. "Thanks" doesn't make much sense, since it's not like he'd ask Combeferre to do this. "Good meeting today," he offers, mostly out of a desire to save something. It's not until Combeferre gives him a weird look that he realizes how bad that probably sounds, coming from the resident unbeliever. And yeah, Grantaire makes an effort not to heckle anyone but Enjolras, but looking over at Combeferre's guarded expression, he realizes that maybe not everyone else draws that distinction. He racks his brain for some way to fix this. "It's pretty nuts you can remember all those numbers off the top of your head and shit," he offers. Combeferre doesn't seem to know what to do with that, either. "I just read about this stuff a lot. I guess it's always in my head, so..." Grantaire is laughing before he can stop himself. "Man, you were exactly the same," he says. "Remember when we used to play war at recess, and you'd bust my chops over historical accuracy?" Something in Combeferre's posture seems to unbend. "It was World War II," he protests. "You wanted a talking robot dog." "I stand by that," says Grantaire. "Can you imagine how much faster we would have beat the Germans with robot dogs on our side?" "That's not even an issue of historical accuracy. That's just fidelity to genre," says Combeferre. Grantaire laughs again. "Yeah, you probably said it just like that when we were 8, too." Combeferre gives a small smile. "I was a weird kid," he admits. "No, it's cool, remember? We compromised. I had a regular dog named Sparky," Combeferre supplies immediately, "who I secretly pretended was a cyborg, but undercover." "I knew it," says Combeferre, and then his expression goes more sober, almost cautious. "I'm surprised you remember all that." Drug use only affects short-term memory, but he guesses Combeferre isn't in a position to know. "How could I forget, dude?" says Grantaire. "Those were the glory years." He actually has to hear the words leaving his mouth before he realizes how pathetic they sound. It's bad enough when an adult breaks out the "high school is the greatest time of your life" routine, but Jesus, who admits to peaking in second grade? He throws a laugh on the tail end, but it's way too late. That comment is just sitting there, like a turd in a public pool. He shifts his weight from one foot to the other, wondering where Eponine could possibly be. If he hadn't said he was waiting for her, he could make his excuses now, retreat to his car, and text her the new plan. Except Eponine never has her phone on, so Grantaire is stranded even in his imagination. "Hey," says Combeferre, "so a bunch of us are getting together this weekend to watch a movie if you want to..." He trails off. Grantaire is already shaking his head. There's a reason why Grantaire is the first to leave every meeting. The ABC is technically a student group, open to everyone. When they assemble in Ms. Hucheloup's room after school, that's fair game. But most of the members are also friends. All of them are, to one degree or another. Except Grantaire. It makes things weird sometimes. Last week, he didn't flee fast enough, and he wound up holding an invitation to Jolie's birthday party. Jolie had been passing them out to everyone in the room, so he couldn't very well skip over one person. But there had been a definite hesitation before handing one to Grantaire, and it had spoken volumes. Grantaire had kept the presence of mind not to throw the thing away. Someone might have noticed, and there was no need to make any of this more awkward than it had to be. But the way he jammed the card into his backpack had probably made it clear he wasn't intending to RSVP. Playing third wheel is bad enough, but 12th wheel? Just no. God, no. "Sounds great, but I've got plans that day," says Grantaire, as casually as he can. Combeferre's eyes narrow. "That's interesting, since I didn't say which day it was." Shit. Grantaire could smack himself. It's times like these he has trouble believing he used to be one of the smart kids. He stares down at the floor, wondering how quickly he could dig an escape tunnel. "Well, you know," he mumbles. "It's just kind of a busy week, and, There's a tapping at the door, and when he looks up, Eponine is standing on the other side of the glass. Bless that girl. Grantaire pulls the door open. "Hey, Eponine," says Combeferre. "Dude," says Grantaire. "Where's Gavroche?" Eponine crosses her arms. "Staying at her friend's house," she says. "Why?" They start toward the parking lot. "I assumed you went down to the middle school to pick him up. I've been waiting here forever. What the hell were you doing?" "Stopped by my place," says Eponine. She shrugs, and there's a telltale clinking from her backpack. "We were out of vodka, so I got schnapps. Peppermint." "Ugh," says Grantaire, with feeling. "Don't get shit-faced tonight," she says. "Last time you fell asleep at, like, 11, and I had nothing to do. I was so fucking bored." "Won't be a problem with peppermint schnapps." She juts her chin, defensive. It was that or gin, and they would have noticed the gin. "What?" The last word is in a much harsher tone, directed over his shoulder. Grantaire turns around. Combeferre is standing a few feet behind them, one hand on the door of his Volvo. Grantaire winces. He'd kind of forgotten Combeferre was there. Then again, it's been established that Grantaire isn't winning any genius points today. "If you want to say something, say it," Eponine bites out. Combeferre blinks back at her from behind his glasses, face impassive. "You shouldn't have that on school grounds," he says at last. "You're the only one that's watching," she says viciously. "Grantaire, are we leaving or what?" "Have a good weekend," Grantaire mumbles over his shoulder. Combeferre nods, wordless. "I hate that guy," Eponine says, as soon as they both climbed into the van. She draws her knees up on the seat. "Did you see that look when he saw me? Like I'm a barefoot orphan in one of those Save the Children ads." Grantaire would classify it as more of a "I am staring at your forehead so I don't look at your boobs by accident" look, but he isn't sure if that would help or hurt Combeferre in her eyes. "I think he's okay," says Grantaire weakly. "He was nice in elementary school." "Doesn't mean anything," says Eponine. "I was a dick in elementary school." "You're a dick now," says Grantaire. "Were you, though?" he asks later, when they're back in his room. On the screen, Eponine's soldier lobs a grenade and crouches behind some crates. "Was I what?" "Were you one of the mean kids? Like, when we were little?" She's holding things down enough that Grantaire feels all right momentarily swapping out his controller for the bottle. He takes a swig and suppresses a shudder. Good lord. His memory had not been exaggerating how bad that shit is. "You really don't remember me, do you?" says Eponine. He shrugs. "You weren't in my orbit." She'd been popular, he knows that much. Too popular to talk to him, although he doubts he'd tried. That hadn't been a concern at the time. He can vaguely remember hearing her name. Other girls upset that they didn't have something Eponine Thénardier had. New shoes, gel pens, pierced ears. He wouldn't have been able to pick her out of a lineup, though. Between skipping fourth grade and flunking his first go-round of freshman year, there was a big chunk of time where they weren't even in the same grade. By the time they started hanging out, she was riding the downswing of a shift in reputation. These days, it's easy to forget where she came from. People smile at Grantaire, talk to him in the hallways, laugh when he answers, "How was your weekend?" with, "Man, can't remember. Must have been good, right?" They keep more of a distance from Eponine. "Not that it bothers her," she says. She says it frequently, blinking too much and not quite meeting his eyes. "Well, I was a bitch," she says. She pauses the game and rubs at her eyes, sighing. They've been pausing the game a lot lately, Grantaire thinks. Normally, they've got more dedication. It was a long time ago. Why? What does it matter? Doesn't, I guess, says Grantaire. He crawls over to hand her the bottle. Eponine accepts it, and takes a long swallow. He tries very hard not to ask if she's okay. So, how have you been? He asks instead. Got a job, she says. He's thinking it's the setup of a joke, but she doesn't volunteer anything else for a long moment. Seriously? Where? Fabric store. Another swallow. The one next to Panera. When? 3 weeks ago. At Grantaire's shocked expression, she laughs, but there's a hard edge to it. I don't know. Maybe you'd be in the loop if we ever saw each other. What? It's not too late, you know, she says. You could drive back around and meet up with Combeferre and all his perfect friends, and fucking drink warm milk and talk about world affairs, or watch opera, or whatever the hell it is they do for fun. He tries to take that all in. Hey, if you want to hang out more, you should just say something, because I'm not— God, Grantaire, she snaps. Not everything is about you. Grantaire swallows. He tries to compose a reply that doesn't start with I. It's a struggle, which kind of underscores her point. He ponders this riddle for a while, and then he says, Want some pizza? Eponine's head is in her hands. Obviously, she says, not moving. Then let's make a pizza. That does earn a look. When her face resurfaces, even Grantaire can tell her eye makeup is smeared. You can't cook, says Eponine. It's a frozen pizza, he admits, but I'll put it in the oven for you. By the time the kitchen is filling with the acrid smell of burning plastic, things are already halfway back to normal. You maybe should have unwrapped it first, she says. Grantaire pries open the oven door and grabs a pair of tongs with the other hand. The pan smokes and hisses and almost slides out of his grip. He flings it into the sink with a loud clatter. Well, yeah, he says, in retrospect. As they wait for the ex-pizza and pan to cool off enough for the garbage can, he pours them each a bowl of cereal. You could always come with me to the meetings, he says. Eponine just snorts. Well, he thinks, she has a point. Jeanne is reading instead of paying attention in World Myth. Nobody could blame him for that. The funny thing is, the book he's sneaking is the Iliad. It may even be in the original Greek. Grantaire only catches a glimpse of it as they pass notes back and forth. He grabs the picture he'd been drawing, a duck dressed as Poseidon and wearing a snorkel, and scribbles on the back, You are the worst at slacking ever. Jeanne's reply comes a few minutes later. I took world mythology to learn world mythology. I'm not letting world mythology get in the way of that. This duck is amazing. Can I keep it? Sure, as long as you promise to take him on walks and clean up after. Thanks, Jeanne says later, when the teacher is done for the day and they're waiting in that awkward space before the bell rings. Grantaire shrugs, shifting his weight from one foot to the other. Not a problem. It took about 60 seconds to draw. He hadn't been trying too hard. Oh, I actually have something for you, says Jeanne. He pulls out a book from his backpack. Have you ever read any World War I poetry? Not much of a poetry guy, Grantaire says, scratching the back of his neck. He takes the book, though, turns it over in his hands. The cover is black and white. Or a huge fan of those old-timey... It's not like you're thinking, says Jeanne. Borrow this. You like it. World War I was kind of the death of old-timey anyway. The Lost Generation, you know? Hemingway and all that. Grantaire makes a face. Even the cliff notes of The Old Man and the Sea was hard to get through. Musichetta hates Hemingway, too, says Jeanne, laughing. Oh, man, at lunch the other day, she and Enjolras were joking. Grantaire almost drops the book. Enjolras made a joke? Jeanne squints at him. What are you talking about? Enjolras jokes? I mean, droll little asides to Combeferre about gerrymandering, sure. Have you ever seen him outside of meetings? Says Jeanne. It almost sounds like an accusation. Grantaire thinks back to that week of detentions, the set of Enjolras' shoulders as he stormed out of the room. "Actually, yeah," he says. "Have you ever spoken to him when he wasn't annoyed or in the middle of something?" "Does he have other settings?" says Grantaire. "I think he was born holding a clipboard." "His poor mother," he thinks. "That couldn't have been comfortable." "He's different when he's just hanging out," says Jeanne. "Well, I don't have any way of knowing that, do I?" "Whose fault is that?" Jeanne snaps, so sharply that Grantaire flinches. Jeanne shakes his head. "Sorry," he says, quieter. "We missed you last weekend."
"You did, maybe," says Grantaire. "But who is this we? Do you have an imaginary friend?"
Jeanne huffs. "Nobody in the group hates you," he says, which doesn't answer the question. "Honestly, I think we could all get along great if everyone just..."
"What, hugged it out and made friendship bracelets?" says Grantaire. "Jeanne, you're great, but the whole world isn't flowers and poetry." He feels bad as soon as he's said it, but Jeanne doesn't look hurt, just distinctly unimpressed. A corner of Jeanne's mouth quirks up.
"Have you ever read Dante?" he says. Grantaire shakes his head.
"Yeah, okay. Grantaire, you're great, but you don't know everything."
His voice is soft, but so forceful that Grantaire feels winded. It's like getting drop-kicked by a rainbow. The bell rings. Jeanne just sighs and says, "Thanks again for the duck." The thing about Enjolras' angry face is that he has more than one. Grantaire is becoming an expert on the topic, and he can confidently report that the guy's got a cornucopia of pissed-off expressions at his command. Each look conveys a slightly different mood. There's the fire in the eyes, clenched jaw of determination, often present when rallying the troops. There's angry on someone else's behalf, which is heavy on the eyebrows. Then there's the bitter twist of his mouth at the mention of global atrocities. Minor to moderate annoyances are more likely to earn an eye-roll and compressed lips combo. Grantaire inspires this look a lot. Sometimes, when the offense is especially weird, it's paired with raised eyebrows and a twitch at the corner of his mouth, almost like he's trying not to smile. Almost. Maybe. Well, it's not impossible. It's just not probable. The point is, Grantaire knows he's in trouble the moment he walks in the room and Enjolras hisses, "What the fuck are you doing?" Because when Grantaire looks up from the three plastic bags he's carrying, Enjolras' face is... it's a look he's never seen before. Grantaire has no idea what's going on. He's not late to the meeting or anything. He's actually, he realizes, glancing around, the first one here besides Enjolras. Grantaire had skipped the tail end of world myth, earning himself a perplexed look from Jeanne in the process, to make a Taco Bell run. He thought it would be funny to bring everyone snacks. Apparently, Enjolras disagrees.
"God," says Enjolras. "I really thought that even you wouldn't. I mean, way to go, Grantaire. Way to hit people who can't hit back."
His voice is flat, cold. There's a staccato quality to his words, each syllable bitten off. "Way to trivialize an issue that affects millions of the most vulnerable people in the whole country. Way to..." It feels dangerous to interrupt, but Grantaire can't stop himself. "What the hell, man? How are you getting this from three bags of tacos?" Enjolras widens his eyes, almost manic in disbelief. "Seriously, Grantaire? You expect me to buy that it's a coincidence? Seriously?"
Yeah, says Grantaire.
"Chalk it up to my eternal optimism and also how I have no clue what the hell you're talking about."
"You brought three bags of Taco Bell to our first meeting to work on rights for undocumented immigrants," says Enjolras. "What kind of stupid..."
"Look," says Grantaire. Enjolras doesn't seem to hear him.
"Goddamn joke, are you trying to..."
This isn't like the other times, Grantaire realizes. After months of baiting and pranks and stupid comments, they finally reach the "you're banned from this group forever" moment, and he never even saw it coming. His mouth is dry. His heart is doing crazy things in his chest. "Please, Enjolras," says Grantaire quietly. It at least puts the element of surprise on his side. Enjolras breaks off mid-word and looks at him. Grantaire thinks he probably has about 7 seconds before another tirade. "For the love of God,"
he continues. Who spends $30 on tacos just to be shitty to people? Does that seem like my M.O.?
I don't know, says Enjolras. You never contribute anything. You don't give a shit about a thing we do or say. As far as anyone can tell, you're not even interested in... All you do is hang around being disruptive.
Disruptive? Last time I didn't even say anything.
This is true. Grantaire had been exhausted, had felt so low that he almost hadn't bothered to show up. In the end, he wound up going out of habit. Listening to everyone talk, seeing them just be themselves, had actually helped, which is sort of pathetic when you think about it.
You sit in the back with your notebook, Enjolras spits out, writing whatever it is you write.
Grantaire doesn't exactly flaunt his drawing. He likes working unobserved, likes catching people in unguarded moments. He'd assumed that Enjolras only noticed him when he was making a ruckus. It's stupid. Of course shutting your mouth doesn't turn you invisible, but Grantaire feels weirdly exposed all of a sudden.
I'm sorry, says Grantaire. Is paper not allowed at meetings anymore?
Because, like, half the group is in trouble.
They're working on stuff, says Enjolras.
God knows what the hell you're up to, he adds darkly.
Grantaire huffs a bitter laugh. It's that or cry.
Oh my God. What do you think I'm doing? Spying for the Russians? Spying for the NSA? Planning my next sinister fast food stunt? Has it occurred to you, for like, a second, that maybe I have nothing to hide and you're completely insane?
Yeah?
Show me one page of your notebook, says Enjolras, eyes flashing.
One page, Grantaire.
He tries to calculate the odds of flipping to a random page that doesn't contain a single sketch of Enjolras. Not his face, not the light glinting off his ridiculous hair, not the sweep of his hands while making a point. The chances are, well, it's not impossible. More than 25%, he thinks. But probably less than 75%. For all his flaws, Grantaire's not much of a gambler. His fingers tighten on his spiral bound.
Enjolras somehow looks both triumphant and disgusted.
That's what I thought, he says.
Just tell me, says Grantaire, speaking low and fast. Tell me what's more likely, that I would go out of my way for some cutesy racist punchline, or that I'd show up with a bunch of random food, having totally forgotten what you guys talked about last meeting. Look at me. I've worn this hat every day this week so I don't have to comb my hair. Do you honestly think I have my shit together enough to... And it's just some big random chance that...
Grantaire wants to throw his hands up in the air, but he can't with the tacos weighing him down.
Look, first I thought KFC, but after Bossuet's chicken rights speech last week, I don't want to be within 10 feet of a drumstick. Then there was McDonald's, but they've got fuck-all for vegetarians, so what was Musichetta supposed to do?
The only other place was Panera. And in the words of Meatloaf, I'd do anything for love, but I won't buy $12 cheese sandwiches for you and all your friends.
Jesus, mutters Enjolras.
Grantaire doesn't know if it's directed at KFC slaughtering practices, the inflated price of a Panera Deli sandwich, or the lightest joking mention of love in conjunction with the two of them. He figures it's better not to ask.
Enjolras rubs at his eyes.
He looks exhausted, Grantaire realizes with a start. His face is drawn and kind of pale, and his shoulders are uncharacteristically slumped. Grantaire feels dumb for being surprised. This is high school. Everyone's running on some amount of sleep deprivation. He can't remember ever being awake for all of morning announcements. But somehow, it's weird to see Enjolras tired. Weird to think about him getting tired in the first place, or thirsty, or hungry, or sad. Grantaire finds himself wanting to give Enjolras a hug. He doesn't even try to imagine how that would go down.
Where's Combeferre when you need him? He thinks.
Because Combeferre would know what to do. Enjolras and Combeferre are easy with each other. Casual. They listen to each other and take each other seriously and make mystifying inside jokes. Combeferre could get away with hugging him.
Are you, Grantaire says, hesitantly.
Enjolras looks up, blinking. I have 50,000 things to... Look, it's just been a long day, okay? He no longer sounds angry at all. Just sort of quiet and... unfocused. Grantaire doesn't know what to do with that.
Anything I can do to help? He blurts out.
Enjolras shakes his head.
Seriously, says Grantaire. Unthinking, he shifts the bags over to one side, reaches out and touches Andras's arm with his free hand. They both look down at it, the bitten nails, the marker streaked across his knuckles. Grantaire snatches his hand back. "Why are you here?" Andras says, and it's the same words as every time before, but they sound different now, almost beseeching. Grantaire has several retorts waiting. He looks back at Andras's face and doesn't say them. I don't know, he says instead, helplessly. Enjolras gives him a long, searching look. Grantaire can't tell if it's the worst answer he could have given, or the first time he's ever gotten it right. It feels very weird to have this moment surrounded with the smell of cheap refried beans. Enjolras must be thinking the same thing, because his eyes flick from Grantaire to the plastic bags dangling from his hands, all the tacos and burritos wrapped in hopeful, colorful paper. "I'd throw them away," says Grantaire. "But I also doubt you're a fan of landfills, so..." "Fine," says Enjolras abruptly. Grantaire stares at him. "Is it fine? Are they still fighting? Did he just win an argument against Enjolras? Does it count as an argument if both sides just sort of crumble?" "Oh hey, Taco Bell," says Barrel from the doorway. "Shit, dude, if you got chalupas, we are best friends now." "Dollar menu burritos?" Grantaire offers. "Close enough, bro." Barrel makes grabby hands at one of the bags as the rest of the ABC files in after him. Grantaire almost cries with gratitude. After Tacogate, things are awkward. First, Grantaire tries to behave better than usual, as if making the case for himself. This lasts about half an hour before the annoyance sets in. Why is Andras determined to think the worst? The guy has wild expectations for all of humanity, except for one tiny Grantaire-sized pocket. After that, Grantaire tries to act the same as before. So the next time Andras is lambasting the Democratic Party as a bunch of spineless, feckless moderates, it's easy enough to break in with, "How do you know they're so feckless? What if they've got, like, hidden feck reserves and they're just stockpiling all their feck and waiting it out for the next feck emergency?" "Feckless is an actual word," says Enjolras through gritted teeth. "It means, I know that," says Grantaire patiently. "Don't be a fecking idiot." "Hey, no, you walked into that, dude." Barrel and Jolie laugh. Foyer looks uncomfortable. Musichetta's half-smile hovers between fed up and amused. Combeferre clears his throat and changes the subject. It's more or less how these things always go. Grantaire wonders if he's the only one who feels like it's starting to become rote, like he's impersonating himself. He might be imagining the tension. He doesn't think so. When the meeting ends, Enjolras pulls him aside with a whispered, "Can I talk to you for a second?" And Grantaire's stomach drops. "Yeah, sure," he says, swallowing. There's a long pause, during which Enjolras volunteers nothing. "Do you have a topic in mind? Or did you mean, like, in general?" Enjolras looks around. Most of the group has dispersed, but Cosette and Marius are doing their usual drawn-out, lingering, oh-so-casual goodbye. They've got their backpacks on as though they're about to leave, but Cosette's handing Marius a mix-CD, and he seems to need to go over it with her track by track. So in reality, it could be another 20 to 30 minutes. "Not here," Enjolras says in an undertone. "My car?" Grantaire suggests. Because if they're going to inexplicably play out an FBI movie, they might as well do this right. Enjolras nods, decisive, and they head out to the parking lot. Grantaire had assumed that once they got into the van, Enjolras would put this whole mystery to rest. But he still isn't saying anything. There's no way this is a good sign, he thinks, or even a medium one. The silence stretches out, then laps them. Grantaire drums his fingers on the steering wheel, fighting the urge to turn on the radio, or, hell, even his windshield wipers. Anything to break up this awful, dragging pause. The one thing Grantaire wants to ask is, "Am I out of the group?" He doesn't. For one thing, there's a reasonable chance Enjolras will say something like, "You were never in the group." Enjolras presses his lips together. He already looks pained, and Grantaire hasn't even opened his mouth yet. That's gotta be a record, even for them.
I need a favor, he says at last.
With what? Says Grantaire.
Ooh, are you forming a cult?
Can I join?
I'd be awesome at cults, I just know it.
He ticks off his qualifications on his fingers.
I love chanting, I look great in robes.
No, says Enjolras, pinching the bridge of his nose. It's about Jeanne.
Jeanne's forming a cult.
Grantaire tilts his head to the side, pretends to consider this.
Yeah, I'm down. So, like, a free love hippie kind of thing? Dream journals and ukuleles for everyone?
Enjolras makes the strangled sound of a man about to get derailed despite every one of his best efforts. Shit like this shouldn't make Grantaire feel proud of himself. Shouldn't give him a warm bloom of triumph in his chest. But there you are.
For crying out loud, Enjolras says. First of all, you'd be terrible in a cult.
Fuck you, man, says Grantaire cheerfully. You never know. I could have hidden aptitude.
They'd be begging you to leave in an hour, says Enjolras. And anyway, it's not like it's a skill to—
God, never mind. I'm starting over.
Grantaire shrugs. Knock yourself out.
The sick feeling in the pit of his stomach is receding. If it was a simple matter of kicking him out of the club, there's no way it would be this hard for Enjolras to find the words.
Courfeyrac wants to ask Jeanne to prom, says Enjolras instead, staring up at the car ceiling. The fact in and of itself makes sense, but given the circumstances, it's one ordinary detail floating in a sea of weird. Maybe this is what it feels like inside a surrealist painting.
And he wants my blessing? He guesses.
Enjolras shakes his head. He hasn't asked yet. He's afraid to. There's something in his tone that doesn't quite fit, but Grantaire can't identify it.
Jeanne's gonna say yes, though.
That's not what he's worried about. People have been harassing Jeanne at school.
The line of Enjolras' mouth goes hard, bitter.
Apparently it's been going on for months.
Apparently, Grantaire mouths.
Apparently.
Like it was only brought to his attention today.
Maybe it was, because beneath the outrage, Enjolras sounds surprised.
Something in the quality of Enjolras' shocked, righteous voice sets Grantaire's teeth on edge.
What planet has he been living on? That Jeanne being tormented is even news.
High school was designed to crush kids like Jeanne. Most people figure this out early in freshman year.
Who the hell is Enjolras to waltz in 3 years late, acting like he's the first person to uncover some scandal?
At any rate, he's still talking.
Courfeyrac is afraid, Enjolras is saying. He's worried that, if people see Jeanne dating a guy, on top of... He waves a hand in a gesture that presumably means every single thing about Jeanne, that it's going to get... bad.
He looks up at Grantaire.
I don't see how we could do anything to make it worse than it is, says Grantaire flatly. Have you seen how that kid dresses? If high school was a savannah, Jeanne wouldn't even be a wounded gazelle. He'd be a gazelle with no legs.
Enjolras' face twists. Disappointment, disgust, something like that.
He speaks really highly of you, he says quietly.
The God knows why goes unspoken.
He's a sweet kid, says Grantaire, and there's no accounting for taste.
I still don't see what this has to do with me.
Do you want me to have someone killed?
I'm flattered, but I'm not that well connected.
No, I...
Enjolras takes a deep breath.
I was talking to Combeferre about it, and his theory, for why people are so awful to Jeanne, is that he's essentially the only one in school who isn't conforming to everyone's preconceived notions of gender and sexuality. There's nobody else like him, so he bears the brunt of everyone's bigotry and prejudice.
And I was thinking.
He breathes in deeply again.
If it wasn't just Jeanne and Courfeyrac, if there were other couples, maybe it would...
make a bigger target? Grantaire guesses.
Diffuse their anger, says Enjolras.
Dilute it.
Complicate the narrative in people's heads. At the very least, create some solidarity.
They're circling closer and closer to the actual reason for this conversation, Grantaire thinks, like water down a drain.
Somehow, he still has no idea what's going on.
So, you want me to go around outing people?
I don't think I'm qualified for, like, detective work. Honestly, most of your friends would be better at that kind of... Enjolras makes a frustrated sound deep in his throat. It is a sound Grantaire has never heard before, which is sort of astounding, given how often he witnesses Enjolras' frustration. "Are you doing this on purpose?" says Enjolras. "Doing what?" "Being completely obtuse. Is it on purpose?" "Usually, you have no problem thinking I'm an idiot," mutters Grantaire. "Why can't you believe it the one time I actually..." "You're not an idiot," says Enjolras sharply. Grantaire stares at him. "Well, shucks, dude. Now I'm blushing," he drawls. As Enjolras continues, "You're just intellectually lazy." "Wow," says Grantaire. "Do you still need that favor? Is this you trying to sweet-talk me? Man, you better hope you stay that pretty, or the dating scene is going to be rough." Enjolras throws his hands in the air. "I'm not trying to... Okay, look." In one breath, he blurts out, "I need you to go to prom with me. I need you to pretend to date me." "What?" says Grantaire. He knows what he heard. He's registered the sounds. But his brain unhooked itself from his ears somewhere around prom, and he isn't sure he's processing anything. "Pretend to date me." Grantaire would have been less shocked if Enjolras had said, "Let's pretend to be Power Rangers." Actually, in comparison, the Power Rangers thing sounds awesome. Maybe he can voice it as an alternative, because what is even happening? Grantaire's never dated anyone. He tries to imagine playing the role of a boyfriend, and for some reason, his brain conjures up 1950s stock footage of couples sharing root beer floats and riding on paddle boats. He and Enjolras would probably sink the boat, he thinks. They'd paddle in opposite directions until the whole thing tipped over. They'd go crashing into the lake, and Enjolras would be furious, and Grantaire would make a joke, and Enjolras would get even angrier, and Grantaire would have to pretend not to watch droplets of water skate down Enjolras' collarbone, and the whole thing would be a disaster. Going to prom together? Has Enjolras ever smiled at him? Grantaire doesn't think so. Even with lofty political convictions on the line, he's not sure Enjolras would be able to rein in an evening's worth of glares and judgment long enough to pass as someone who doesn't hate him, let alone as someone who wants to make out with him, for crying out loud. Grantaire can't picture Enjolras holding his hand. He can't picture them sharing a limo or getting stupid pictures taken or slow dancing or anything. Grantaire has a pretty good imagination, and it's not like he's never tried to imagine kissing Enjolras, but it's a blank. Enjolras is looking at him. Enjolras is waiting for an answer. "Please," says Enjolras, quieter. "I need you to." Some stupid, shameless part of Grantaire's mind perks up its ears at the word need, and then Enjolras adds, "Should I go down the list? Combeferre is waiting to ask out a girl he likes. Foyer is going to be away the weekend of prom. Barrel's got a girlfriend. Jolie and Bossuet already have plans, and Marius can't keep a secret." Grantaire tries not to be hurt that he was the last option. "What about posting something on Craigslist?" he snarks. Enjolras shakes his head. "Seems too risky," he says. So readily, it's clear he had thought of it already. Grantaire literally ranked below Craigslist. Fucking awesome. "Let's be real," says Grantaire. "Kids are stupid, but they're not this stupid. Nobody on the planet is buying us as a couple." "I know this is asking a lot of you," says Enjolras slowly. "I understand that. I've been thinking about this, and if you agree to it, I can pay you $20. "You think we should pretend to date?" Grantaire says. His voice sounds dead to his own ears, hollow. "And in exchange, you're offering me money." "I don't have a job yet," says Enjolras, "but by the time prom comes, I can probably make it more like 40. Grantaire doesn't realize he's angry until he's furious, until he's spitting the words. "Get out of my car." Enjolras stares at him. "What?" "Leave! Get out! Is some part of that too complicated for you? Now who's being mentally lazy? Jesus!" Enjolras' eyes are wide. "What are you... Get the fuck out of my car," says Grantaire through gritted teeth. Clearly, Enjolras is surprised, because he obeys, slamming the door behind him. Or maybe he just wants to be out of there. Grantaire counts to 100. He rests his face on the steering wheel and pulls out his cell phone. In defiance of space, time, and all precedents, Eponine answers on the first ring. "What the actual hell?" says Eponine later, flopping down on Grantaire's bed. "I know," says Grantaire. "I know. You realize that's basically the plot of Pretty Woman, right?" Grantaire rolls over and squints at her from the floor. "Believe it or not, it's not cheering me up to be compared to a hooker," he mumbles. "Wasn't trying to cheer you up," she says. "I just think it's funny." She pats his knee where he sprawled on the floor. "You're out of detergent, by the way." "What?" "Laundry detergent. You're out. You need to put it on the shopping list or whatever." "Nah, that'll just look suspicious." Grantaire's mom knows he doesn't wash his clothes often enough to put a dent in the bottle. "I'll pick some up the next time I'm out. She'll think she got an extra and forgot about it." "Whatever," says Eponine again. She pulls out a bottle of nail polish, unscrews the cap, and starts in on her toenails. "What are you going to do if your parents wake up and realize their washing machine's full of girls' clothes?" Grantaire snorts, trying to picture the expression on their faces. "Tell them I'm trying to find myself. Then, while they're freaking out, you can make a rope ladder from my sheets and climb out my window." "We're on the first floor," she points out. "It's like a 2-foot drop." "Fine, you can make a rope ladder out of pillowcases. I don't know. Did you bring anything to drink?" "No," says Eponine. "You haven't been a fun drunk lately." "Ugh," says Grantaire, rubbing a hand across his eyes. "She maybe has a point." He sighs. "Man, why do you have to offer me money?" Eponine glances over at him. "It's bugging you this much?" "What?" "The whole..." She makes a vague flapping gesture with the hand holding the nail polish. Grantaire would tell her to be careful about getting it on the floor, except she's seen his floor. "The Julia Roberts thing." "Of course not," he says immediately. "Because, you know," says Eponine, "as shit to complain about goes." "Ugh," says Grantaire again. "No, seriously," she says. "A super hot person comes up to you out of the blue, like, 'Hey, let's tell everyone we're dating. Oh, and also, here's $20, just—'" "Would he have offered Combeferre money?" he says, before he can stop himself. "Or Barrel, or Jolie, or Courfeyrac?" "Asking Courfeyrac would defeat the whole—" "That's not my point, and you know it," says Grantaire. "If it was one of his friends, hell, if it was anyone else, anyone at all, he would have counted on them, to do the right thing." Eponine makes an unimpressed face. "Will you be my pretend gay boyfriend for great justice?" "I'm not saying it wasn't a stupid plan," he says. "Would you have done it, though? If he hadn't said anything about money?" "Would he?" Grantaire hasn't given it much thought. If Enjolras had asked him the way he would have asked Bossuet or Feuilly or any of the others, no defensiveness, no bribes, just please. Just, "I need you to," like back in the car. And Grantaire can still remember how those words had felt for one dizzy second, before the other half of the sentence came into play. And, oh great. Grantaire had almost forgotten how, in Enjolras' estimation, he ranks below Craigslist. He stares up at the ceiling. "Well, I guess we'll never know," he says. "He's a douchebag," says Eponine flatly. She wiggles her toes. "If he was, this would all be so much easier," thinks Grantaire. "He's really not, though," he says. "Because that's the thing. Enjolras wants what's best for the world all the time, so earnestly that it's almost hard to watch. He loves his friends. He loves his country. He believes in people. Just not, you know, Grantaire." "No," says Eponine. "He is. He makes you sad, I get to call him a douchebag. That's how it works. Get with the program." She starts in on the other foot. "Hey, when I'm done, want me to do your toes?" It's early March, so it's not like anyone's going to see Grantaire's bare feet for months. "Yeah, sure," he says. He picks his head up off the ground, long enough to give her a weak half-smile. "What would I do without you?" "You'll find out on Friday, I guess," she says, most of her concentration still on the nail polish. "I've got a field trip all morning, so I won't be at lunch," Grantaire lets his head drop down with a sigh. Without Eponine, there won't be anyone to keep his mind off. He's a douchebag, Eponine repeats. Well, that's just eerie. Grantaire should probably be more grateful not to be eating lunch alone. The guys at the table, skateboarders, or at least they carry around skateboards and pretend to know what they're doing on them, were happy to let him join them. He sits with them in algebra, which is to say, at the back of the room, cracking wise. It's not so bad. He doesn't even have to lie about his grades, because, unlike his other classes, Grantaire actually is only sort of scraping by in algebra. They're nice enough, he guesses. It's not their fault that they're as dull as paint. He's been zoning in and out of the conversation for about 5 minutes, and when he checks back in, yep, they're still talking about pot. And, okay. Grantaire's reputation may be overblown, but it's true that, not so long ago, there was a year of his life where he was high more than he wasn't. It is, in fact, a big part of how he got through that particular year. He still smokes up with Eponine sometimes, supplies permitting. Still, much as Grantaire enjoys a good pipe or whatever, there's a limit to how long people can talk about pot before the whole thing becomes aggressively boring, and it's about 15 seconds. The bottom line is, they're doing an awful job of keeping his mind off shit. Still, Grantaire is keeping his eyes on this side of the cafeteria. He's determined not to spend lunch sneaking looks at what he's come to think of as the ABC table. It's not an official thing, and not every member sits there. Some of them don't have the same lunch hour, but it's a good chunk of the group. Combeferre, Courfeyrac, Marius, Jeanne, and Musichetta. And Enjolras, of course. Grantaire is fighting not to wonder if Enjolras is telling his friends about what happened, if it's still okay to come to meetings, if Enjolras is angry, if Enjolras is... Grantaire doesn't have much shame, but he has a little, and mooning over someone who puts you on the same moral level as a prostitute feels below even him. So yeah, Grantaire is keeping his eyes far, far away. He misses Eponine. Her uncanny ability to read a situation. Eponine would assess things in a second, and start in on a purposely wordy tirade about her favorite reality shows, bringing him up to date on whatever fresh bullshit has happened now. She has awful taste in TV, and she'll talk about it forever if allowed. Eponine would pull on his sleeve, keep her eyes on him, subtly angle herself in his line of sight, and prattle on about challenges and eliminations until Grantaire could breathe again like a normal person. He wants to bang his head on the table. Instead, he decides to buy some nachos, mostly so he can have an excuse to stand up and walk around for a bit. As Grantaire joins the back of the lunch line, he can see Jeanne standing maybe 10 people ahead of him, bad fuzzy haircut bobbing up and down, as if to some internal rhythm. Anyone else would be listening to music. Jeanne's probably thinking about Leaves of Grass. Madame Marc from detention walks by. "Hey, Mike," says the girl in front of Grantaire. "Hey, Melissa," says, well, Mike, apparently. "Give me 5, he says to Grantaire. And Grantaire does, even though it cheapens the institution of high-fives to hand them out left and right. Ahead of them, Jeanne is smiling at the lunch lady and paying for his food. Mike looks up at Jeanne, glances back at Melissa to make sure she's watching, and starts to walk forward. Grantaire has enough time to think, "I don't like this," and then it happens, very quickly. Mike elbows Jeanne in the side, hard. Jeanne's lunch tray clatters to the ground, milk carton spraying everywhere, spaghetti sliding across the tile. "Sorry," says Mike. The insincerity in his voice is as stark as the red sauce spattered on the floor. Grantaire is standing a good distance away, but he can still hear it when Mike leans in closer, and coughs out a word that sounds a lot like fag. Grantaire feels sick. The set of Jeanne's shoulders, the resignation as he crouches down to scoop up the remains of his lunch, this is all something Grantaire understands intimately. It's almost too familiar to register. That's not what's bothering him. Because Grantaire chose the exact wrong moment to look back out at the cafeteria, and so instead, he'd caught the expression that flickered, just for a moment, across Courfeyrac's face. It's like being punched in the stomach, Corphyrock is afraid, Enjolras had said. And at the time, Grantaire had been too confused, and too wrapped up in his own bullshit, to stop and think about what that meant. Corphyrock likes Jaehaun, probably never shuts up about the kid in his absence, wants to take him to dances, lights up when Jaehaun smiles and murmurs, "Hey," at the ground. And Corphyrock is afraid for him. They live in one of the safest parts of the state, but Corphyrock, who is effortlessly likable and does public speaking for fun, feels genuine fear that someone is going to harm the boy he likes. And this is normal. This is the most mundane thing in the world. They're in high school. They're too young to vote or buy cigarettes. They're still kids. And Jaehaun might not be safe here, and Corphyrock knows it. Distantly, he registers that Jaehaun has scooped up all the noodles and sauce and dropped it in the garbage. That was fast, he thinks. Well, probably Jaehaun's had practice. The lunch lady hands him a new tray of food, her expression carefully blank, and Grantaire remembers that brand of kindness, how it made him want to cry more than the bullying, because it meant so much, and it shouldn't have been necessary in the first place. Grantaire wants to run a mile, or punch Mike in the mouth, or make Jaehaun a magic goddamn suit of armor. But anything he can think of is so pointless, and so small, and just... there's nothing Grantaire can do that will accomplish anything. But he is suddenly, sharply, so tired of doing nothing, of being such a goddamn coward all the time. He knows he's about to do something stupid. It's not a new feeling. What's new is how little he cares. He is so angry he can barely see. And is this how Enjolras feels all the time? He knows he should be shocked they could ever have something in common, but at the moment, Grantaire doesn't care about that either. Later, he won't even be able to ask himself, "What was I thinking?" because he'll remember how quiet his mind had been. His internal monologue is just sort of white noise and static, undercut with the drumbeat of, "Fuck it, fuck it, fuck it, fuck everything." Grantaire sets down his empty plastic lunch tray. He's crossing the room before he fully understands what he's doing. "Enjolras," he says. Enjolras doesn't hear him, hasn't actually witnessed the scene with Jaehaun and Mike, is deep in conversation with Combeferre. Grantaire doesn't care. "Enjolras," he says, louder. Enjolras stops talking and looks up. He's not angry, or at least, Grantaire doesn't think he is, but the easy smile slides off his face. He has a bottle of green tea in one hand, and the other hand is holding his fork, like he'd been underscoring a point with it. Combeferre looks up too, frowning slightly. Actually, a lot of people look up. Grantaire might have been shouting. He's standing about 15 feet away from the table, too far away to have this conversation in private, and Grantaire doesn't care about that either. In some detached way, he thinks this probably makes more sense. If they do this once, in front of everyone, they won't need to keep telling the lie over and over to make it spread. This is going to get around on its own. "What?" says Enjolras. The expression on his face is hard to read. Confusion, maybe. Eyes wide. They're breaking every pattern they've ever had, and, guess what? Grantaire still doesn't care. "I changed my mind," he says, willing Enjolras to understand. But Enjolras shakes his head, not following. His eyes, if anything, are wider. "What you said yesterday in my car," says Grantaire, meaningfully, and he can see the exact moment Enjolras gets it, because he sets down the tea with a clunk. "What did—" says Combeferre. Musichetta shakes her head, and Corphyrock shushes him, watching intently. Jaehaun slips into his seat, leaning so close that his chin almost brushes Corphyrock's shoulder. Neither of them seem to notice. Enjolras's knuckles are white on the fork. It makes a weird rattling sound against the table. Then he takes a deep breath and sits up straighter, like he's steeling himself, like he's bracing for some bullshit joke, and Grantaire wants to laugh at how little he feels like joking right now. "You were right," Grantaire says. "About some things." "Do this once," he thinks. "Make it look good." He takes a deep breath, summons the most sincere voice he can. About us. I think we should date. Enjolras, he says, will you go to prom with me? It feels like jumping off a cliff, or in front of a loaded gun. Marius makes a high-pitched noise. Musichetta mouths, oh my god. Jeanne may or may not gasp. And even though he had to know this was coming, Enjolras is gaping at Grantaire. Combeferre keeps glancing between the two of them, still frowning. Most of the lunchroom is staring, and it occurs to him suddenly that Enjolras is under no obligation to say yes. Enjolras could still be angry about yesterday. Enjolras could have realized if even Grantaire thinks the plan is stupid, it's probably worth abandoning. Enjolras might have already found some sketchy Craigslist replacement. Enjolras could say no, and leave Grantaire standing here. All of the adrenaline, or anger, or temporary insanity, flees him in the space of a breath. He stays upright thanks to muscle memory alone. Enjolras opens his mouth, but says nothing. His jaw works. There is not enough oxygen in the cafeteria. There is not enough oxygen in the world. Grantaire has taken a leap, and now his fragile mortal body is about to hit the ground, or the bullet, or the metaphor. He's glad Eponine isn't here to witness this. He bites his lip. Yes, says Enjolras. What? Says Grantaire, feeling dizzy. He has a sudden crazy urge to sit down on the floor, as if everything might make more sense from there. Enjolras nods. Yes, let's, we should date. His voice has a slightly breathless quality Grantaire has never heard before. Abject panic, if he had to guess. He knows the feeling. If they were in a romantic comedy, the whole cafeteria would break out into applause. But this is Grantaire's actual life, and so instead, there is a ringing silence. Cool. Okay, then, says Grantaire. Great. He rocks back on his heels. I'll just, he adds, jerking his thumb over his shoulder at the skateboarders. Yeah, says Enjolras. Great. Okay. He clears his throat, then nods. On the other side of the table, Combeferre is all but blinking in Morse code, trying to catch Enjolras's eye. Enjolras misses it. He seems to be careful not to turn his head in that direction. His thumb toys with the lid on his bottle of tea, twisting and untwisting. Cool, says Grantaire. Yeah. And then he steps away before it all turns into a horrible sestina, where the two of them just keep repeating the same six words over and over until the world ends. He's made it 5 steps when Courfeyrac shouts, What? No, 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 dude, no! Get back here! Grantaire pivots around. Boyfriends at the table, says Courfeyrac. New rule. You ask someone out, you sit next to them, because we are not children. My lunch, says Grantaire. Courfeyrac waves a hand, magnanimous. Grab your food and then get your ass back here. And Grantaire nods, because it is the path of least resistance. Back at the table where Grantaire was sitting before he embarked on the third worst decision of his life, the skateboarders are no longer talking about pot. That may be the silver lining in this whole affair. Instead, they look up at him, eyes huge, mouths hanging open. I want you to know that I blame you, Grantaire tells them solemnly, reaching for his lunch. This never would have happened if you could just learn to small talk.